This is item H. It's not an action item. There are no materials for this item. We invite Mr. Kurt Soderlund, Corey Jasperson, as well as Mr. Zlatko Theodorovich. Welcome and thank you for being able to pitch hit.
Absolutely, Chief and members of the council. As you know, the governor's budget was released on January 9th, a day early. There was a technical issue about getting that budget and sort of getting everyone ready, and folks had to scramble to get that out. So we were all caught off guard trying to gather all the facts that we could as quickly as possible. Here's a brief overview. The governor's budget proposes $106.8 billion in general fund expenditures, $154.9 billion all funds, of which $3.3 billion is for the branch, $1.3 billion is that is general fund. Just to give you some context, in the 12-13 budget, which is sort of a low point in terms of overall general fund, we were 1% of all general fund spending, and 20% of our total budget came from the general fund. With this proposed budget, that includes, thankfully, some modest increase of $105 million for the branch. That raises our share of total general fund expenditures to 1.2% of the general fund, and 33% of our total budget comes from the general fund. So there's been some increases, there's been some movement backwards, forwards in terms of the branch as far as general fund share. As I mentioned, the $105 million is by this administration to recognize reductions that have been taken by the branch over the past several years. Of a particular note, what was one of our sort of late-breaking pieces of information as we evaluated all the budget documents was that the governor has provided direction on how his administration expects the 100 million share that is in the Tronco's to be distributed, and indicates that it should be distributed using our WAFA model, our workload and allocation funding methodology. So we believe that that's an important statement by the government to recognize the value of our model that was adopted by the council, and think it was and continues to be an important tool for us in our advocacy as we started last Tuesday at the press conferences in front of the buildings in Sacramento. There is $5 million that's distributed to state-level judiciary, and in our memo that we issued, a revised memo on January 14th, we laid out all the components that each of the branch entities get, a little over $600,000 to the courts, the Supreme Court, $2.9 million to the courts of appeals, I mentioned $100 million to the trial courts, $1.2 million to the council AOC, $6,000 to the facility branch program, and the Indian Scrubbers Research Center, a little under $200,000. And so that builds upon the $60 that the trial courts have provided last year and the $3 million that state-level entities were provided last year. Just to put the budget in context, what's important to understand is that this governor is recognizing that the revenues that are being generated are concerning to him in terms of them being ongoing versus one-time, and makes a substantial pay-down of this wall of debt that he's referred to over the last several years, reducing the long-term debt in this upcoming budget by $11 billion, and completely eliminating it by 17 and 18. That includes repayment of our loans, so there's no change in terms of the payback of our construction loans, so that's good for us. It's unfortunate that we're taking it in the first place. A big part of the repayment of loans and debt is related to Proposition 98. When some of the budget solutions were taken, Proposition 98 was reduced, but it was resulted in an owing of that money in future fiscal years. And so there's $6 billion being put towards sort of paying back those deferred payments to schools. Also, another important aspect of the governor's budget is a proposed $1.6 billion transfer to the Rainy Day Fund. Obviously, these revenues are in part due to the Proposition 30 passage, which increased the revenues for 5 years on a temporary basis. The governor is, I think, attempting to put the state in a position to try and sort of move towards a point where those revenues may not be there, and what can we do in terms of the state to be prepared for that. The governor does raised concerns about other unfunded costs, in particular $200 million of retirement costs that have not been addressed. And there have been many that have been concerned about, say, the state teachers' retirement system being substantially underfunded. And so there's a concern about how to cover those costs. And then total state unfunded liabilities are over $350 billion. And so there are concerns about, we're making good and we're making progress here, but there's still a lot of costs that are being accumulated by the state over the past several years that need to be addressed. An important priority for the administration in the budget is K-12 schools, raising almost $70 billion in general fund expenditures going to schools, which is a $22 billion increase over the 11th fiscal year. So we're seeing a significant and substantial investment in K-12 education. I want to point out that there are other major increases in higher education, UC and CSU, the University of California, and the California State University system. There are, also increases in the healthcare and human services area. So there's lots of areas in the budget that are seeing increases, but again, there's some investment in one-time expenditures so that the government doesn't create a sort of boom and bust approach of build programs up to an unsustainable level over one-time revenues and then having to turn around and cut them to the extent that the revenues don't come in as expected. I think we discussed this previously, and I think what our economist presentation was made at prior council meetings, that we've now become more reliant on very volatile revenues. And so I think the governor is seeing that message and taking it into his budget presentation. The budget also, though not specifically committing to, it does essentially assume that there's sufficient revenues to provide state employees with the 2% COLA that has currently been negotiated with most of the collective bargaining units. But that final determination isn't to be made until the May revision, but we do expect that is an aspect of the budget that will come to fruition. There are some other important budget proposals either that didn't happen that we're still pursuing or things that we just wanted to bring to your attention. We've been advocating consistently and strongly for a reversal of the 1% fund balance policy, and the governor in his message does sort of address that straightforward in saying that they continue to believe that state-level fund balance is more appropriate than fund balances at the local level, outside of the 1% that's already approved statutorily, saying that it's to the council to identify the needs and priorities of the branch in order to allocate funds for that. So that is sort of a restatement of position from their May revision of a couple of years ago. So I think that they wanted to address it head-on by stating that they believe that the 1% is the most effective means of managing the branch's affairs from our perspective. There's some other items in terms of retiree and health benefit costs that are also extensively discussed in the government message. We did submit and request funding for the trial courts and the state level judiciary for health benefits and retiree costs, and no specific funding was provided in the budget. But in fact, sort of a lengthy discussion of the benefit issue for retiree in particular was discussed, and we did include a memo. But basically, they're concerned that there are employees within the branch that do not pay either what is considered a full share or anything towards their retirement, and they ask us to look at those issues as we look to be more efficient in our operations and expect us to look at sort of implementing the public employees pension reform act as soon as possible in order to generate savings that could help us adjust those kinds of costs. There are some other issues, sort of more of a technical nature, in terms of the truck or trust fund expenditure authority and expenditures out of our improvement and modernization fund. So I've made presentations consistently over the last couple of years, is that revenues in those funds have been declining as our just fewer folks out there driving tickets, fewer resources coming into those funds. and there's a recognition that we don't have the revenues to support the level of expenditures that we've had historically, but we feel like there's some opportunity to hopefully see revenues flatten out and those not become an issue for our allocations out to the trial courts. Again, there are no new sweeps or loans of our construction or operating funds, so that's good news for us. And just in case there are any folks who are concerned about what was included in last year's budget, and in terms of some issues with the $400 million restoration of some one-time cuts, those are continuing in the budget of $418 million. So folks hopefully should be planning in terms of their budget projections. We've heard some had not considered that to be ongoing, and so we want to make sure that folks are aware of that. And then $63 million does continue. As far as the budget goes, we obviously have a lot of advocacy that we're looking through, and we think that last week's press conference was a good start to that. We are interested in exploring technology. That's going to be something that's coming before the council this afternoon. And the Department of Finance and the governor in their message do address the issues of technology to some extent by indicating that they have a willingness to work with us to develop a sort of a long-term technology funding plan. But their view is looking more at the Improvement Modernization Fund as the source for those investments, likely rather than necessarily the general fund. So we'll see how that goes. Later on this afternoon, they said we would bring in a BCP the budget change proposal to submit to the Department of Finance for their consideration to make the necessary investments in technology.
So just to comment on trying to be optimistic about these things, that there seems to be a different flavor in terms of dealing with the Department of Finance, and Judge Darby may want to comment on this too. But in terms of our dealings with Michael Cohen, we definitely have agreement and have a conversation with him about these particular issues. And with so far through the fiscal year, except for 1 month, all the revenues have exceeded what had been the projections. And so we hope that trend will continue optimistically. And I think that there's some sense amongst ourselves that any revise may create some other opportunities for funding modifications in the branch too.
Just once again, thank you. Most of the judicial council members were with us yesterday in the Capitol, and the chief. We did, I think, 51 or 52 visits. 45 were with senators and assembly members. Hearing a lot of positive buzz from folks in the Capitol, so thank you for that. It's early. Ledge analysts will come out with their analysis of the budget in mid to late February, and then we would anticipate budget subcommittees would start their hearings in March. And so we will share information as it comes in. Thank you.
A couple of more things before I have a question. So we did conduct two statewide phone calls to spread the word so that everybody was hearing sort of the same consistent message. That was helpful that we got our budget memo out quickly and then updated it immediately once we found out additional information. And that information was important. And I think we feel like doing these budget calls also for the state level judiciary gives folks the same information so that if there are any questions, we don't have people going off and making sort of strong assumptions about how they're building budgets as they go forward. Made the same presentation that was last week at the Budget Advisory Committee meeting, and we did raise the issue of the governor's direction in terms of the $100 million and how it should be allocated. And the question was raised at the meeting, did anybody have any objections or concerns about that approach? And while we're not going to be bringing a recommendation at this point to the council, which will eventually happen towards the end of this fiscal year, there was no concern or objection to that approach as requested by the government to use the law from this method to allocate money. I think that's important before we come to the recommendations of the budget committee, the budget committee, that we do let you know that that was discussed.
Approximately a week ago, we had a legislative balance office, and there were two issues that they really wanted to on. And one was they're very supportive of technology moving forward, and so we're looking forward optimistically to our budget change proposal to council groups of submitting that as part of the finance and other process. Another area where they expressed very explicit concerns was on the facilities management program. We feel that it's underfunded, even though there's another $15 million that's being added from the Copper Trust Fund. The sense was that they're aware of the additional $12 million that we can get from the general fund and support that program. And I would really suspect that they'll come up with some recommendations that support providing more funding for facilities management.
One more area of question that the LAO brought to us is this issue of 1%. We're still very concerned about the 1%. And we've asked about cash flow and trying to understand really what the truck put needs are within our $150 million loan authority really works for us. So they still have concerns. They've heard from their bosses, the members of the legislature, and they're asking us to help them turn the page and figure out a better way to explain it so that those folks can understand. And fund balances are a technical operational issue, and it takes some time, I think, to really get folks to understand the nuances of what that means. We're really working with the to try and make that story something that they can sort of make in an easy, digestible fashion so they can get some relief from the program itself.
Judge Wall.
Thank you, Chief. It's a great report. Thank you for that. And also, thank you for getting the word out statewide as quickly as you did when the governor's budget came out. And the California leaders were excellent, so everyone had the same information, same early on. If I understand the governor's budget correctly, it's based on his somewhat positive view of what the revenues would be this year. The LAO has a higher estimate. If, like last year, the LAO is right and the governor's wrong, is there anything in the governor's budget that tells us how he would spend that excess?
Just to sort of refresh your memories, last year in June, the LAO came out and said we're going to have about $3.5 billion more than what the governor assumed, and yet the budget act that was enacted was based on the Department of Finance's revenue projection. So at this point, the LAO has not come out with an analysis of the revenue projections at this point, and so we're not sure whether or not they concur with the revenue projections. They are generally supportive of the approach. But obviously, if they believe revenues will be higher, then they're going to be looking to their bosses as to how the legislature should allocate that in terms of the budget plans. It won't be until May that we hear how the governor would look to address that. So at this point, this is the governor's plan based on the revenues that have been projected. I'd say it's a bit premature to try and anticipate where additional investment could come from. I think one of the things would be some of the articles that have come out recently about the state of the state, the concerns about the teacher retirement, that there's no plan there. But there's just a number. I mean, there's lots of needs, and there were lots of folks cut over the last 5 years. And so just to try and suggest that, one area of investment maybe over the other. There's a lot of investment, not as much as everybody wanted. We clearly need more resources as the issue. Hopefully our advocacy, which reflects all of the priorities of the council from our August meeting in terms of budget change proposals, we're still moving forward.
Well, I have a question and an observation. The first is there was language in the governor's budget about changing up business as usual. I personally never think branch business as usual. But I do ask whether, and what's clear is your discussions, Kirk's discussions, Corey's discussions, what he's hearing, your relationship with the Department of Finance. Are you hearing anything specific by what they mean by that or what direction they're looking for besides the business of mentioned yesterday, even in the state of the state, the pension issue that you had referenced earlier in your presentation? Anything beyond that that we should be aiming for, other than what we are already doing?
I think, just as a reminder, I think what we're doing important is to recall that at the beginning of this fiscal year, there was a report that came from all the trial courts in terms of how that $60 million was going to be spent. There's a follow-up report that's due in April to the legislature, and it's going to be very important for us to be very articulate and convincing in terms of where that money went and how it was used. So that's going to be an important factor. I don't think that addressed your question specifically, Chief. It's right now, Department of Finance has kind of a conservative tone. And yet, my sense, and Jody and Kerr, before your thought, you can chime in on this too, that there is this feeling that there's not this firewall that exists in terms of having these conversations. So I think, given the fact that we're only 6 months in terms of reporting into fiscal year in terms of revenues, that as January, February, and March roll through, that if the revenues remain high, I think that represents the opening of the door, not just for us, obviously, but we're just going to want to chime in on this, but to get some of these additional funds. So the discussions, again, we've had with the Department of Finance representatives seem to be very positive and optimistic.
The last line of the government is with respect to the branch. The judicial branch must continue to implement uniform standards, employee compensation changes with regards to this benefits issue, and operational efficiencies with the goal of increasing access to justice. Now, we know that in May of 2011, we had the message from the governor saying, we want you to look at how you distribute your funds, how you administer your budget. And so what came of that? The funding work group and the great work and the issue that was sort of culminated in the walk-in. But we know coming out of that group was this issue that Judge Walsh has headed up in terms of looking at efficiencies within the trial court operations. I think there's a sense from the, at least the members of the administration that are on that committee, that we need to continue to look at branch-wide efficiencies, not just, say, individual trial court efficiencies. To the higher ed to go to the outer limits of distance education. So while there's something specific there, they haven't given us specifics, just rather you need to continue to work on system-wide efficiencies and improvements. And it says uniform standards, efficiencies. Mm-hmm. It's up to
legislature about efficiency in general. Haven't received any specifics. Would point out we had last year in 2013, we had over 24 efficiencies in the budget in a combination of bills. I think we ended up with seven who made it through the process, the really teeny tiny one. Meaning the efficiency that we had in legislation, they had opposition. We weren't successful in moving forward on. So we need to continue to work on that. We have, you know, more sponsored legislation that we're seeking offers for, you know, right now at Office of Government Affairs to continue pushing that forward. I've also heard a concern that perhaps the efficiencies that we have achieved, we're not doing a good enough job communicating that to folks in the legislature and in the governor's office to, you know, step up those efforts. I also think there's a distinction between, as you know, the 24 efficiencies that were approved for sponsorship by judicial counsel are mostly, you know, pretty technical, small changes. And I think that the concerns we're hearing from the legislature as well as the administration, they would like to see much larger efficiencies, but, you know, haven't received any specific areas of inefficiency that they would like to see. So that's to continue keeping that pipeline full and coming up with ideas and communicating the saving and efficiencies that we have achieved.
Thank you. Judge O'Malley, Judge Jarr, Judge Rosenberg.
Can we start this, Judge Ellsworth, in that line? May I have a voice as well?
Thank you. After Judge Rosenberg. Thank you, Judge O'Malley.
Thank you.
The trial court funding working group at the end of our term working out those issues, we were working on preparing our report, and in that session that we were together, we were going over a lot of the efficiencies that the courts had achieved over the last 10 years since the beginning of the Lockyer Trial Court Funding Act, Lockyer-Eisenberg Funding Act. And even those on the committee were surprised at a lot of the changes that the courts had achieved. So I agree with Corey that the communication of what has been accomplished, you know, we don't toot our own horn. We just make our changes and we go about our day and do our business. We're not so, or have not been so concerned with really how others perceive us. We're more worried about how am I going to get through my calendar and how am I going to make a just decision on this difficult case before me. And I'm not so worried about all the changes that I made in streamlining papers and documents that our court clerks use every single day, and the numbers of tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands that make it more efficient for court users, because we're all using the same forms, and we've been doing that for years. So again, you know, we're just not used to having to put out there, oh, look at what I've done. It's just not the way that we operate, and it's not our focus, and it's not our job. And so, you know, we might be lousy at communicating these things, but it doesn't mean that they haven't been done and that we've been sitting on our hands for 10 years not making any efficiencies. So at the end of that reign of that committee, we did list quite a number of things because it was asked of us, you know, what have you done? And so I'd like to, hopefully, our next visit in February, have that list recreated from that report so that they don't have to read the report, because I know the legislators, how busy they were when they saw us, simply don't have time to do that, but prepare some list that maybe in February we can impress upon them, and maybe the next visit to the governor's office, things that have been done that they just don't know about, that have allowed us to be able to do more with less over the last many years that we have these cuts.
Judge Jarr, then Judge Rosenberg.
Yes, thank you, Chief. It should be plain to everybody that the business of efficiencies is actually sort of a multi-layered subject matter area. At one level, efficiencies can only result from improvement in the rules of freedom of practice and procedure. In California, those are statutory, as a consequence of which the political process has much to do with how we go about getting from point A to point B. I don't believe it's lost on the governor. In the chief's final meeting, I shouldn't say final meeting, but one of the most recent meetings with the governor relative to the budget in the last month or so, that subject came up, and we made a point of emphasizing the fact that in California, unlike most states, the rules of prudent practice and procedure are principally made by the legislature. He understands. That's not to say, however, that other folks in the executive branch who advise him and other folks in the legislative branch who advise the legislators appreciate that. So we are not suggesting that we can't affect efficiencies within the framework of those rules, but that many of the efficiencies that could be accomplished really are outside of our control because of that time. Going to the second layer, where we can affect efficiencies within that framework, I certainly reinforce the points made by that analysis, because I discovered in my 40-some-odd visits to the trial courts over the last 3 months that they were taking for granted things that they had to do of necessity being the mother of invention. Over the last 4 or 5 years, as they stretched the dollars to accommodate the court users. And any number of anecdotes of really brilliant invention to do that so that service could be provided even as the dollars were reduced came to me. And I understand that we've had some difficulty extracting those kinds of anecdotes when we seek them by survey. And I think it's because of what Judge O'Malley said. Folks simply take for granted that they do things to make things work better and they move on. And they open court in the morning and they continue with their work. So I suppose I underscore the point that Judge O'Malley made, because we need to extract those thoughtful efficiencies from our constituent courts, both for the sake of illustrating that they are ongoing and they are in multiple, and also for the sake of ensuring that where cross-pollination will enable others to adapt and adopt some of those efficiencies that are truly replicable, that happens without any delay. I've spoken with Corey about our campaign of advocacy, which is already ongoing, but certainly will step up in the next couple of months. As you know, last year, our campaign of advocacy was focused, as was mentioned yesterday, on court users and court customers, because it's through that prism that legislators best understand what the consequences are, the causes and effects, if you will, of budget cuts on those folks that we serve in our state. This year, we are going to continue that because it is, after all, the central point of budgetary support for the branch. But we are going to augment it with those kinds of examples of efficiencies and improvements in process that have occurred throughout the trial court. And it's vital, and I invite you, please, to assist Corey in acquiring that information. It's vital that we have that again so that we can put our best foot forward and dispel these vague notions that we've been sitting on our hands that unfortunately seem to persist in some circles.
Thank you, Judge John. Judge Rosenberg, Judge Ellsworth, and Judge Harmon. And the very best time.
Efficiency is very interesting word. At one level, you can look at it and understand that trial courts don't control the state of the cases that come to us. You know, in that sense, they're inactive. All the cases that come to us are cases that are filed with attorneys or by citizens who are bringing cases to the courts. And I guess statistically, even if you quantify it, you can look at the number of cases, how long it takes to process, how much money is allocated for that. We also have 15-year laboratories in this country, 49 states that this is very quantitative. But there's, you know, efficiencies is also a two-edged sword, because sending cases to mediation or having self-help centers may not necessarily be the most efficient process. It could really delay things, but it might also affect the quality of the result. So it's not just a quantitative issue, it's also a qualitative issue. The latter is very, very difficult to evaluate.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg. Judge Ellsworth?
Thank you, Chief. In addition, to Judge Rosenberg's comments and those before, I would like to add the following, that they talk of uniformity of standards and efficiencies and access, and those we have reacted in a most defensive manner, scrambling and working hard to communicate what we've been doing for years and also working very hard to take a look inwardly and make significant changes from the EOC down to each and every trial court. But offensively, and I use that in a double entendre, if you will, we still stand without judges being funded up and down the state. And so I think that there still continues to be this issue of uniformity of standards, efficiencies, and those wonderful words we like to bandy around for the Sacramento rights to, and yet we are underfunded in other ways, and that is not having judges and equity with regard to the judges that need to be funded and added. And I do believe that that has to be part of our conversation in a most aggressive manner, because until we can start to be more equalized there, then we will forever be treading water in the very deep end and losing and tiring ourselves. So I think that's part of the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Ellsworth. Very good point. Judge Herman, then Mary Beth Todd. I'm sorry, and then Judge McKay.
Just following up first on Judge Rosenberg's comments. Collectively, the efficiencies that we have created have to be aimed at access, and that's actually part of, for example, the technology area, that part of the governor's conference, that the governor recognizes the needs for technology to support efficiencies, but also that those efficiencies are part of the course improving access to justice. On another front, in terms of our messaging to our brother and sister branches, maybe it is an approach to think about for February that we lead with the idea of here's what we've heard the message, here's what the efficiencies, here's the efficiencies that we've achieved over X period of time, and in terms of our ask, here's the efficiencies that lead towards better access for the Justice Department's public business and lawyers, here's what we hope to achieve. With this additional funding with specifics. We've done that to some degree with our talking points, but in talking to the legislature yesterday, a number of legislators were very interested in, well, if we do do X in terms of refunding the justice in the state, then what specifically are you going to do with it? What courthouses are you going to open, et cetera, et cetera, and you gave you X last fiscal year. And what did you achieve with what you did in Baskets? We documented that on a prospective basis in terms of access projects that can support court by court. And maybe that is the focus of the message to leave with in the next round. Here's what we've done.
Good idea. Good idea. Thank you, Judge Herman. Then it's Mary Beth Todd, Judge McCabe, Judge Walsh, and then Justice Baxter.
Thank you, Chief. We can always be more efficient. I don't think anybody disputes that. And I think we all understand that that's what we should. We want to see a more united approach to efficiency, a more uniform statewide approach to efficiency. What I fear is getting lost in these comments is the fact that we have, I think, weathered a 5-year storm better than any other state department. I think our employees work harder. They are more conscientious. They are customer service based. They genuinely care about the services we provide. And I really hope that anybody listening to this meeting understands that we understand that. We recognize that. I would match the judicial branch against any other department as far as how hardworking we are. I think, honestly, the reason we have a hard time crowing about our efficiencies, it is so ingrained in our everyday, it doesn't stand out in our mind that it's something new or different. It is how we do business every day. And while we will work, we have the task force chaired by Dick Walsh, and we are working on demonstrating where we have been efficient, and we'll continue to look at how we can move forward and with uniformity from a statewide approach. I just really have to make sure those out there working in the judicial branch know that we understand how hard they're working, and there should not be any reflection on them and all that they have sacrificed and the efforts they've put in these last 5 years, hanging in there with us as we've gone through these very difficult times.
Thank you. Very well said, Mary Beth. We'll hear now from Judge McCabe, then Judge Walsh, then Justice Baxter, then Judge Baker.
Thank you, Chief. It appears to me that the battle here is a battle with perception. We're fighting perception. I hear the comments. I'm reading the budget. The budget talks about on page 122 the disparity in how trial courts handle the reduction. Highlighted the need for a comprehensive evaluation of the state's progress in achieving the goals outlined in the CAC. In essence, as we're referencing, the 58 trial courts are homogenous. They're not. Alpine is not Los Angeles, and everybody in between have unique variables that make them wholly distinctive and independent. And so I'm troubled by the generic reference without any specificity, and I'm inviting our leadership to have that conversation because I'm a simple mind and I need it spelled out for me. What is it really that you expect to be done? Because we aren't a homogenous unit. We can't do the same thing in one county that you can do in another. Can we do on some on a systemic level? Sure. There are some things that can be done, but for the most part, we have done. The budget also on page 123, paragraph 3, talks about the expectation that reserves afforded the trial courts the time to operationalize ongoing reductions, inferring that we haven't. Yet, as we sit around here listening, we have. Again, dialogue. I'm encouraging dialogue. This is more of it's an invitation to the DOF to spell things out for us. And I think the difficulty is that the view is, and what I found troubling in our visits yesterday was you hear comments about we haven't felt it enough yet, or that we're still fed on the hog and overfunded. Those little comments really make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, because we're very efficient in this branch. We have done more with less. In fact, we're our worst enemies. We cut and find innovative ways on a local level in different areas of the branch to get the job done. And I agree with Judge O'Malley, we are terrible at PR and broadcasting what we have been done. It's not that we're stubborn or obstinate. We are doing what we can, but we're, and strangely enough, all former advocates, and we're poor advocates of our branch. And so I know we can do better. I know we will do better in communicating that and educating the other two branches. I think we're on the right path. I'm hopeful, and I firmly believe that the message will finally be clarified and crystallized so that everybody understands the branch, in fact, is operating at a high efficiency level. The last comment I have is we still have not been successful in conveying the fund balance issue to them. And again, I don't know how we handle that hurdle, because it seems to me, based on comments and conversations, that they are of the mind that, you know, this is what we need to do, to centralize our
the fund balances, if any. I think we should not abandon, and I don't think we have, the leadership continues to try to talk to that. But again, it's difficult talking in the can because I think that's what we'll be seeing. But there has to be a way of conveying to them the continued need for fund balances, which allow the courts to adapt and be nimble organizations in order to effectively provide a service to the public. And right now, we're not. I think this, if I might boldly say, is probably a historic low for the courts in providing services to its communities. Lines are longer, waits are longer, and this is not in any way, shape, or form of a retribution or a court acting stubbornly like a mule. It's a reality of a reduction in resources, which is fiscal, that trickles down into labor and everything else. You can only do so much with what you have. And it is, I firmly believe, every court, every element of the judiciary's being to provide effective quality service to the public. And in the end, we need better funding. With that, thank you.
Thank you, Judge McCabe. Judge Walsh, then Justice Baxter, then Judge Baker.
Thank you, Chief. I read the governor's message and was referenced to greater trial court efficiency. And, of course, I've read the Working Work Group comment on the same thing. To be clear, the branch is on. We're fully aware of this. The Chief has appointed the task force on trial court fiscal accountability. She's blessed me with being chair of that group. And given us a very short turnaround time and a deadline which we'll meet, we're on, but it's a big job. We will come back to this council with a report at our April meeting. By that time, we expect to have something in place, not an overall solution, but a beginning. A couple of things I would like to stress. One is we're not just talking about efficiencies. We're also looking at effectiveness. And sometimes effectiveness doesn't save money, and sometimes it costs a dollar or two. Our goal, and it's in, this is what the funding work group said, is to find efficient and effective methods of delivering equal access to justice. So we keep in mind, it's not just looking for money savings. How can we do this better? And we're looking for that. Another thing to be clear on is we have not communicated our successes to the legislature, and I think that's a good point. And attached to the funding work group report is a long list of things we've done, and we'll remind you of that when we report. But we've also been ineffective, and this is a fair self-criticism, with communicating those successes to each other. And if Contra Costa comes up with something great, they apply it to the calendar and they get back to work. But Santa Clara doesn't necessarily know about it. And Santa Clara is not necessarily incented to adopt it. Now, we're all getting better and better at talking to each other, the more that's happening. But part of our goal will be to find some way to communicate between file courts so that we'll know each other's efficiencies, know how to quickly get to them and how to apply them in our own court. Our work will be overtaken or handed off to the Blue Ribbon Commission, which we're aware of, and they can handle things like mandating, measuring, dealing with those sorts of things. But we do think that we can add some value to this. But we want to do it, and I hope the Blue Ribbon Commission does it, with the notion that we don't want to turn our 58 trial courts into 58 DMV offices. That hurts everybody. Each trial court is not only a separate, Dave Rosenberg called it, but it's sort of an experimental place, but it's also it reflects separate community values, and those must be preserved. And the incentives and the creativity based on having some independence at this trial court has only helped justice in this in California. So I like to think of it more as 58 vineyards, all growing maybe slightly different varietals, but all looking to make great wine. And if somebody sees some blight somewhere, they tell their neighbor and say, hey, here's how you can get rid of the blight on your grape stock. But not turn it into some huge factory where every glass of wine is the same. That's not our goal as a court. Justice should be throughout our states. But how we get there, given our local community values, has to be preserved. And we don't plan to step on that in our work as a task force. Thank you.
Cheers. Well, Judge Walsh, I like to say the judicial branch and the trial courts aren't Starbucks. Justice Baxter, then Judge Baker.
Judge Walsh said a lot of mine. I think efficiencies you have to define the term, and there are certain efficiencies that are properly addressed on a statewide basis, properly addressed by the Judicial Council, the allocation project, for instance, I think is exhibit number one, and that's technology exhibit number two. But on the other hand, what is efficient in Los Angeles may not be efficient in Austin and vice versa. And there is a need picking up with the Walsh indicated, there are two needs. One is three needs. One is to provide initiative to the various trial courts to come up with initiative. Number two, when they do, to properly recognize them and to communicate that to the other trial courts. And number three, to utilize that process to communicate to the legislature and to the governor, here is what we've done. Now, unfortunately, we did have that in place with the CLEX Award. And the CLEX Awards went by the wayside because of the budget cuts. And what I'm hearing today is the need to reinstate the CLEX Awards, maybe with a little modification, maybe with a little input from OGA in terms of how that videotape or DVD or whatever it's going to be can be better utilized to make available to the various legislators and their staff, the governor's office. That would be the best evidence you could have as to what the trial courts and what the Judicial Council has in fact done to promote efficiencies. So I would suggest that the need to communicate within our family and to the legislature should most effectively be done by reinstating the CLEX Awards with some modification to bring OGA into it to make sure that it's not something that's simply limited to the judicial family, that it's shared with the legislative family and also the executive branch.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. That is a terrific suggestion, and I believe we'll look into a modification of the CLEX Awards in a way that we can share it and be more inclusive as well. Thank you. Judge Baker.
These are all excellent comments and we'll take away from you from yesterday the last few years about the importance of communication as it's not something that we typically have a lot of time to do, is that we're going to do some things like handling good cases. But we really need to rededicate ourselves to that. It's not important just with the legislature, but also with the public and with the media. And I wanted to share a quote out of this morning's Sacramento Bee at Coyle. It's otherwise a known profit of Coyle, but it's because there's a paragraph in there, Coyle is rather scathing, and he can make part of our record by quoting, but I think it really brings home to the council the reality of some of the impressions that are out there that we need to address. That paragraph reads as follows, discussing our budget issues, the legislature, the Coyle needs a current budget. The Judicial Council must accept some responsibility for pulling the plug in 2012. So there's the hundreds of millions of dollars by a badly botched statewide computer system designed to bring the courts into the 21st century.
the nuclear box has got kept. There's more work to do to make the force more efficient. Now, I think most of us in here are full of passion and disagree with your opinions. But that's not the capital and the capital newspaper, the same newspaper that the legislature is reading. It illustrates the new life, and hopefully to all of us, how important this task is to be for us to communicate with the community.
Thank you. Judge Baker, Judge Herman.
Just one final thought on this, and this again goes back to the Rosenberg's comment about efficiencies without altruism. Being forced by disastrous economic climate, closed courtrooms, and closed courthouses, where to handle four of our case managers, is efficiency that military can't be enforced. We look at some efficiencies that are detrimental to our coordination. And that's a message that we should be aware of. So, that defunding is more, does in some cases work that to be more efficient.
Thank you. In closing on the subject, I want to say two things. And the first is, it's clear that we need to present a piece that serves as communication and advocacy for the efficiency the courts achieve. But also, we must continue to provide a list of impacts, notwithstanding the efficiencies, for those to understand that this is an ongoing detriment to justice and service in California. My second comment before we close and take the break and take up item D is this. I want to sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, thank the Administrative Office of the Courts, its leadership, and especially Zlatko's team, Corey's team, also the PJs and CEOs who are part of this, because a year ago when I said we need to do a blueprint, I received shock and awe and the concern that it couldn't be done. And with the leadership of Judge Jarr, speaking to Jody and the Kurtz, and then reaching out to Corey to reach out to the PJs and CEOs, and then dumping it all on Zlatko, we have a blueprint that is incredibly in-depth and impressive and gets a lot of press and play, but the truth is that you and your team are the architect of this fine piece of work, and I don't want that to go unmentioned or unnoticed or take the glory for it. So thank you, all of you, and Zlatko and team. Thank you. We now will stand in recess. We'll break for our morning recess till 10. Can't see it. 10:10. Thank you.